Money makes the world go around, the world go around, the world go around. Money makes the world go around, it makes the world go round. A mark, a yen, a buck or a pound,
a mark, a yen,
a buck or a pound is all that makes the world go around. That clinking, clanking sound can make the world go round. Money, 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 money.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Deborah James, the Director of International Programs at the Center for Economic and Policy Research in Washington, D.C. She has over a dozen years of expertise working on issues of trade and democratic global governance. At the Center for Economic and Policy Research, her work focuses on the World Trade Organization, the International Monetary Fund, and U.S. policy towards Latin America. Welcome to Background Briefing, Deborah James.
Thanks so much for having me.
And there is an unusual candidacy underway to become the president of the World Bank, in as much as Jeffrey Sachs, who is an economist and a health expert and the head of the Earth Institute at Columbia University, he has nominated himself and has picked up, I think, about 27 senators and I believe about, 8 world leaders in this campaign. But let's begin with the campaign itself. It is highly unusual, right?
Absolutely. Nothing like this has ever happened before. As you know, it's called a gentleman's agreement. I don't know what's gentlemanly about it, but it's an agreement between the United States and Europe whereby the United States decides who will be the head of the World Bank and Europe gets to decide who will be the head of the International Monetary Fund. And, you know, in recent years, this has come up under quite a bit of criticism from developing countries, particularly the BRICS countries, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, have made quite a bit of a stir saying, hey, you know, this is not acceptable. You know, the IMF and World Bank, at least historically, were not even operating that much, you know, in the U.S. or Europe, and it's just ridiculous that we get to control these institutions. In addition, it's crazy because most of the past presidents of the World Bank that have been put there by the United States were actually bankers or past politicians. If you guys remember, like, Robert McNamara was there as sort of like a way to get him out of the administration after the failure of the Vietnam War. And so this time, to have an actual person who's been a development expert, who's worked in 125 different countries, put himself forth has really caused a big stir. And, you know, people have different opinions about Jeffrey Sachs, but one thing you've got to admit is that he has really changed the debate and opened up the concept that maybe somebody should run the World Bank who actually knows something about development.
Well, indeed, it is the prerogative of the President of the United States. Ultimately, his vote is the most important. And, of course, Lyndon Johnson did send Robert McNamara to the World Bank after the Vietnam debacle, and George W. Bush sent Paul Wolfowitz after the Iraq debacle. So I guess who are we looking around to send? It's Lawrence Summers, right, after the economic debacle.
Yes, well, that is unfortunately the bad news that within the White House, you know, they've been leaking a number of other different names, potentially current ambassador to the UN, Susan Rice. She has been clear that she doesn't want the job and is actually probably gunning for Secretary of State. Current Secretary of State Hillary Clinton has been clear she doesn't want the job. These are all names that are sort of circulated, probably as a sort of fake shortlist, to then say, well, I guess we'll have to go with Larry Summers because he's the only one on the shortlist who is interested in the job. I probably don't have to tell your audience what a terrible, terrible idea it would be to have somebody with as terrible of a track record as Larry Summers to be leading this institution. I think we would all probably agree that there really should be a lot more candidates out there from developing countries. It's really unfortunate that that there haven't been some nominated. There would be some excellent people out there, obviously, who would be great heads of the World Bank. But in the absence of that, and given that the U.S. is going to nominate somebody, we think that it's pretty clear that the U.S. candidate should be Jeffrey Sachs. And from what we hear, the White House is a little bit perplexed about what to do because they still are really pushing for Larry Summers, and they've been getting some pushback that that's not going to be acceptable, not only to developing countries, but potentially to Europe. And there have been a number of developing countries who've nominated Jeffrey Sachs instead, and the U.S. seems to be having some cold feet about that.
Well, let's go through the countries, Deborah James, that have nominated him. I believe there's 8, is that right?
Yes. Well, Kenya was the first, then the country of Namibia, Bhutan, the Prime Minister of Haiti. He was also nominated by Chile, Colombia, Mexico, Uruguay, and Guatemala. So that's quite a number of different countries, Asia, Africa, and Latin America. He's also been supported by the, I believe it was the Islamic Development Bank. So really, you know, quite a regional diversity, and there, I understand that there are a number of other nominations that are coming forward. As well, it's important to keep in mind that, many other countries, even though they maybe haven't put their name on a particular candidate or not, they have said that this needs to be absolutely an open and transparent process whereby all countries have set in the decision-making process. What's supposed to happen is that there's supposed to be the nominations are due by Friday. And from what we understand, Jeff Sachs is the only one who's been nominated so far. And then the bank is going to make a short list of three people, and then the executive directors will decide. Of course, everybody knew in the past this would just be the United States putting forth its, you know, it's one person for the short list. And so it's a little bit up in the air what's going to happen now that Jeffrey Sachs has really upended this process.
Well, isn't Congressman Representative John Conyers going to take a letter to the White House on Friday with 27 congressional signatures?
Yes, actually, he did last Friday.
Oh, last Friday, I see.
Wonderful. Yes, Representative Conyers, as you said at the beginning, the House of Representatives, not the Senate. But he, there were 27 altogether congressional leaders. And these really are leaders from the Progressive Caucus, many of them leaders from the Black Caucus, who have been involved in these issues in the past and who have been tracking the impacts of IMF and World Bank policies on developing countries, and who just are excited about the opportunity for somebody to represent this institution who has some experience on the ground, who has actually been involved in development in Africa. You might know that Mr. Sachs, when he was is one of the people who invented the idea of saying that there needed to be the global fund to fight AIDS, tuberculosis, and malaria. This was back when he was the head of a UN commission looking at macroeconomics and health. And at the time, this is hard to imagine now, but at the time, there was not one single person in all of Africa who was getting supported on antiretrovirals from a multilateral agency or foreign government. And if you remember, there was lots of debate, oh, Africans can't tell time, so they won't take the medicines right, and all this other, you know, terrible ideas. And Jeffrey Sachs came in and said, we can do this. We can negotiate with the pharmaceutical companies to get cost-based pricing. We can raise the money. We need to do this. It's not okay to just say, well, throw your hands up in exasperation and say, well, you know, over 20,000 people are dying every day of hunger and poverty-related diseases. What can we do? We have to do something. We have to solve this problem. And now there are literally millions of people in Africa who are on the antiretroviral treatment and getting other life-saving interventions like bed nets to treat malaria and other diseases. Because of that commitment to making it happen and his ability to sort of generate both contributions to the fund and also support from governments and work with people on the ground to implement those solutions.
Again, I'm speaking with Deborah James, the Director of International Programs at the Center for Economic and Policy Research in Washington, D.C., where her work focuses on the World Trade Organization, the International Monetary Fund, and U.S. policy towards Latin America. And we're talking about the unusual candidacy of Jeffrey Sachs, who is openly campaigning to become the next head of the World Bank, a job that is usually given to political appointees and former bankers, quite often as a political payoff for prior service in an administration. As we mentioned, LBJ gave the job to McNamara after the Vietnam debacle, and more recently George W. Bush gave the job to Paul Wolfowitz after the Iraq debacle. And it is expected that President Obama's leading candidate will be Larry Summers, who is a fairly incendiary figure, particularly amongst progressives who blame him in large part for much of the deregulation and the policies that led to the economic disaster of 2008, and President's handling of the economic disaster of 2008, which unquestionably set back his presidency, his first term. He has already, Jeffrey Sachs, I guess, in starting his campaign, he wrote this op-ed recently in the Washington Post, "How I Would Lead the World Bank." What was his central argument?
Well, he has been, as I mentioned before, a leader in particularly looking at some of the issues of healthcare and global access to healthcare, and the fact that there are so many interventions that actually can be done and provided by the international community to make sure that those basic healthcare services are provided to people around the world. That includes things like intervention on diseases like AIDS, but it also includes, you know, local-based preventative healthcare. It includes reproductive services, you know, the whole slew of things that that ought to be happening that unfortunately are not in many cases. He also has a big commitment to education and to making sure that, both certainly for the poorest, the biggest bang for your buck is really in elementary education, including making sure that kids in poor areas who are you're hoping to draw into elementary school education actually have feeding programs as well, because there's so many of those kids who aren't able to go to school because they don't have because they're too hungry, because they don't have any food, you know, once they get to school. And so having a program that actually includes feeding of kids, as well as absolutely a ban on user fees. And this is an important issue because, if you remember historically, these institutions thought that it was a great way to do what they call cost recovery, to actually charge poor people for getting health care and education. And when they started implementing these user fees, there was a massive drop-off in participation. Big surprise. And so one of the most important commitments is to be sure that poor people should have absolute guaranteed access to the most basic important thing of healthcare and the most basic important thing of education, if they're able to, if they're going to ever be able to then, you know, do what they need to do to grow their economy domestically. I think it's important, you know, he's not somebody who thinks that the World Bank is going to parachute in and solve the whole world's problems. The World Bank actually only distributes about $26 billion on an annual basis. It's not that much. It's dwarfed by even the Brazilian National Development Bank. It's certainly dwarfed by, you know, things like Chinese investments. But it does have an important role in terms of consulting and saying what the policies should be that countries should undertake. I should also mention he has a big commitment to helping poor farmers improve their productivity in agriculture. This is an area that has been controversial for him because some people feel that he promotes too much the green revolution and too much dependence on fertilizers and other inputs. And I think having read his book, Commonwealth, he addresses some of those concerns. Commonwealth really reads like a blueprint for how the World Bank should be run and what should happen with foreign aid. And he certainly does advocate the use of fertilizers, but there's a lot more to it in terms of appropriate technology for water and all sorts of other things in his proposals as well.
So tell me then, on the political left, given that the Progressive Caucus in the Congress are supporting him, he obviously has a lot of progressive support, but not universal, right? So there are some people that remember the Soviet and Polish shock doctrine approach to development and don't consider him suitable. What's the argument? I mean, you're obviously an advocate for him getting the job. How do you argue against those that say that Jeffrey Sachs contributed towards misery in Poland and Soviet Union, or unnecessary misery, shall we say?
Definitely. Well, I think he is more criticized for his work in Russia as well as Bolivia, actually. And I think his answer to some of that criticism has been that some of the programs that were the worst things that people are rightfully very upset about, including the privatizations, were actually things that he argued against while he was there, and that he did have some policy influence, but not to the extent that people are talking about, and actually that his work in Poland was much more successful, for example, than the work in Russia, which was obviously, you know, that he left the work in Russia very exasperated, actually, because his policy recommendations were not being implemented. I am not totally familiar with the work that he did on the ground in those countries. I couldn't tell you if he was actually the one in the room making the decision or if it was somebody else. I think for most governments, that's very hard to analyze in retrospect, you know, who was the one making that policy or decision. I do think, however, that the fact that he is critical about some of that impact and in agreement with quite a few of the people who have said you know, what happened in Bolivia was terrible, or what happened in Russia was just so abominable. And he had, I have, you know, heard him agree with that and say, yes, some of those things were terrible that happened. However, you know, you're giving me much more credit for, you know, sort of running the whole show than actually was the case. And I actually disagreed with that. I don't know what the real, you know, what the real situation is there. What I do know is that he is not a big advocate for privatization, particularly looking at important things like access to water, access to education, access to healthcare. And in fact, if anyone has had the chance to pick up Commonwealth, they will see that he's extremely critical of leaving any of those things just up to the markets.
Well, just in closing, Deborah James, obviously there are objections to his candidacy in some quarters of the left, even though mostly he's getting support because of what people perceive as his mistakes vis-a-vis Russia and Bolivia in the past.
Yeah.
But then you look at the present, one of the most prescient of all economists, Nouriel Roubini, who warned about the crash before the 2008 crash. He's a big supporter. I've spoken to Jeffrey Sachs a number of times, and he spends an awful lot of time in Africa. And he's always, every time I call him, he's usually on the road somewhere in Africa.
Yeah.
So he's actually not just talking the talk. It seems like he's walking the walk.
I think so. I think he has a lot of experience. I also think, you know, that we're looking at a really dire situation. The U.S. has been very clear it's going to nominate a U.S. person. Unfortunately, no developing countries or even other countries have come up with any candidates. So we're really looking at this Sachs versus Summers dynamic. And I certainly encourage people to call the White House. I'm sure many of your listeners do that on a regular basis, 202-456-1414. Call the White House and let them know if you think it makes sense to put Larry Summers in the head of the World Bank, or if you think a development expert like Jeffrey Sachs should be the head. And then, you know, if by some magic way of all of this campaigning that is happening around the world and in the U.S., he eventually were to potentially become the head of the World Bank, then I'm sure we would have a lot of accountability work that we would continue, just as we did when, you know, we're all very happy about Obama winning the presidency instead of McCain, but that didn't stop us from holding him accountable to making sure that he actually implemented his campaign resolutions and, you know, to protest when he didn't, and to hold him accountable that way. So, you know, an institution doesn't change just because of one leader, but it can have a very big difference to have somebody like Jeffrey Sachs lead the World Bank instead of Larry Summers. So I hope that folks can get out the word about that and let the White House know how you feel.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Deborah James.
Thank you so much.
Again, I've been speaking with Deborah James, the Director of International Programs at the Center for Economic and Policy Research in Washington, D.C. She has over a dozen years of expertise working in issues of trade and democratic global governance. And at the Center for Economic and Policy Research, her work focuses on the World Trade Organization, the International Monetary Fund, and U.S. policy towards Latin America. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking about how the billionaires are now putting their money into nonprofit 501c4s so that they don't have to disclose who they are.